New Year's Eve with Damien Trench. If Christmas is essentially a time of domestic and family strife dressed up as tradition and fun, then New Year's Eve really is something rather different. It's a chance to really cut loose and enjoy yourself, rather than pretend to enjoy yourself whilst actually fretting about turkey timings and whether it's acceptable to serve bread sauce in your second gravy boat. Christmas is, regrettably, confined by its own template. You must have a tree, presents, a big dinner with a fairly precise list of ingredients, and you must also have your relatives there. I'm not saying these things aren't important, but there do seem to be a lot of rules to follow, and I've never really been one for rules or rigidity. I'm a fluid sort of person. I enjoy swimming against the current. That's a metaphor. I actually feel quite unwell swimming anywhere tidal or fast-flowing. Lidos I can do, even the odd Swedish lake, but water rushing at me or breaking over me in waves, if it's all the same with you, I really rather would not. But with a New Year's Eve party, you can invite who you like, when you like, and serve them what you like. And the only rules you really have to obey are to be awake at midnight and perhaps pop a few celebratory corks in the process. Whatever has gone on over the course of the year, and there have been some pretty dreadful ones of late, apart from 2012, when I finally met Patricia Hodge entirely unexpectedly in a cheesemonger, and she told me an anecdote about Sir Norman Fowler that staggered me so much that I knocked over an entire table of Chèvre. But whatever has gone, I always feel that the tones of Big Ben allow one to draw something of a line in the sand. One door is closing, another one is opening. One can look to the year ahead with a fresh sense of optimism and purpose. Goodness, that last sentence sounds as if it could have come directly from the Queen's speech. I wonder if I've inadvertently lifted it. Or maybe we just have a prose style in common. It's not impossible. Although, in conversation, I think we'd probably have rather less of an overlap. Goodness knows what I'd think of to say if I found myself at a drinks party where I was expected to exchange a few words with each of the heads of state of the various Commonwealth countries. I'd probably ask whether they suffered from any allergies that were making them wary of trying all the canapés. Also, I always think it's worth making sure that people know where the nearest lavatory is, should they be planning a visit. But then one imagines Her Majesty has staff who oversee that sort of thing. It may well be that the Royal Palaces are well signed in that regard, and thus guests are never left in any doubt. I simply do not know. One thing you really ought to give some serious thought to when trying to plan a successful New Year's Eve party is the food. Party food. Food for parties, in other words. What to do? And what are people expecting? Some people turn up to parties having already eaten, and it's not an insensible precaution. Sometimes people only serve drinks, and if you arrive with an empty stomach, where does that leave you? The next thing you know, you've had one glass of champagne, three more of white wine, and you're slumped in an armchair being consoled by a stranger after having suddenly burst into a fit of sobs because you've inexplicably remembered a slightly unkind remark made about you by Jay Rayner in an article that he wrote for some forgotten magazine 7 bloody years ago, for heaven's sake. Not that that's ever happened to me, I hasten to add. It was an example of the sort of thing that could trigger an attack of the weeps if you were easily upset and on anything other than excellent terms with Jay Rayner, which I am. That said, I would never turn up to something described as a drinks party without about 4 ramekins worth of cashew nuts in my coat pocket, just to be on the safe side. My partner Anthony is rather less worried about food not being served at parties, but then we are rather different people. He has a quite extraordinary capacity for alcoholic drinks, indeed all liquids, and rarely has an empty stomach anyway, on account of his insistence. He denies this is the case, incidentally, but I keep finding the evidence that render his denials utterly worthless, on snacking pretty much all day long on mini baby bells from a stash of the things that he hides in our piano stool. We don't own a piano, incidentally. No, we have a Clavinova, but a piano stool works for both, it turns out. I also had reason to nose round his shoppice the other day and looked in the miniature fridge, which he told me was for mineral water. Chock full of ham. Wafer-thin stuff from a convenience store. Honestly. But my genuine feeling is that to serve no food, even at something specifically described as a drinks party, is just harebrained. Far, far too risky. It is possible, though, to cater, quite literally, for people with full tummies and people with empty tummies. The trick is to serve food that is small enough for a full person to eat a little of without feeling as if they're about to pass out, but that is substantial enough for a hungry person to snack on to the point of fullness. And at my New Year's Eve parties, I always serve them in very, very large quantities, for which people, by which I mean my guests, starving or full, are always very grateful. Recipe. Devils on horseback. For this, you will need however many prunes you want, and half that number of rashers of streaky bacon, and then double that number again, i.e. the number you have of prunes, of wooden cocktail sticks. Plus a few spares, I dare say. All you have to do is cut each rasher of bacon in half. Using scissors is fine, don't be afraid of yourself. And then very slowly and delicately wrap each half rasher around a prune and then thrust a cocktail stick right through it. This serves two purposes. First, it holds the prune and bacon together. And secondly, it gives the lucky person who'll end up eating it something to hold on to. Once you have prepared all of your devils, you need to cook them. A lot of people place them on baking trays and cook them in the oven, but I've never been a fan of that method. My preference is to cook them on the hob in a heavy-bottomed skillet or even paella dish. Simply arrange the devils in the pan and then put them on a medium heat and allow them to cook in their own juices, turning them over when you see fit. Then take them straight out to the table, or if you're not confident in your own oven to tableware, transfer them to a suitable serving dish. They really are incredibly simple to make, and what's difficult is trying to prevent Anthony eating them all himself instead of handing them out to guests. He seems to be able to eat vast quantities of prunes with complete impunity, and he's not like that with everything. Oh, no. One tradition Anthony and I do like to maintain in the interval twixt Christmas and New Year is to hit the sales as soon as they go live on Boxing Day. We're only too aware that these days most sales begin on Christmas Day, nay, Christmas Eve, Ian, but to go shopping on either of those days seems wrong, like wearing jeans and a waistcoat. I suppose it's the calm before the storm of New Year that I like. Calm, you might spit, at the Christmas sale. Have you gone mad, Trench? What next? Tea should only be drunk by the left-handed. Alan Yentop for London Mayor. Let me explain. Not long ago, I was victim to unscheduled engineering works on the Virgin Route between London and the Midlands, and thus had an unexpected 4 hours to kill in Birmingham city centre. I sincerely hope you understand my meaning. I had time to use up or waste as I saw fit, not actual time at my disposal with which I was to engage in the act of killing. That would be ridiculous. I imagine it would take me far longer than 4 hours to summon up the courage to kill anything, although I would make an exception for people who stop at the top of escalators. I dispatch them without forethought. Utterly sick-making. Anyway, Birmingham city centre. Me. 4 hours. Conundrum, you say? Incorrect. One word. Selfridges. Three additional words in the service of geography and context. The Bullring Centre. What a delight. Modern architecture is something that can make me feel at best nauseous, and at worst, well, worse than that. The new Bullring, however, is nothing short of a delight. If I suddenly realise I've a chance to visit, I will nearly always skip there, even if it's raining. And it can be sometimes, can't it? That's just what happens. That's just the weather cycle, isn't it? It can't be helped. Well, it could a bit. I'm not denying the effects climate change have. That would be the antithesis of clever. So there I was, at the Bullring, in Selfridges, during the sale, taking it all in. I had maybe a small handful of items, but not all that much stuff. Some soaps, I think, and probably socks for my partner Anthony, because he just goes through them, partly because he really does have inordinately large and indeed long feet, and partly because I suppose it's the shape of them. His big toe protrudes, not freakishly, but nonetheless substantially. There's a most marked difference between the length of his big toe and the length of, for instance, his second toe. It means that no matter how high the quality of the sock is, and we prefer to buy good ones, the material is always operating at absolute full stretch. The shape of his feet, the size of his big toe, puts a strain on his socks, and there's nothing, I'm afraid, that can be done about it. You can grimace, you can snipe and snivel, or you can just be thankful for what you have. I dare say we have to remind ourselves of the fact that some people probably have even worse to put up with. But anyway, I'd picked him up a couple of pairs of socks, and I was standing there just observing the rhythms of the place, the comings and goings, the chatter, the forced conversation, the gossip and those silences that mean far more than anything I could ever say, all right. And there was a table, and laid out upon that table were a number of jumpers, or should I say, a number of styles of jumpers, all neatly piled up and folded just beautifully. I found myself utterly transfixed. Customers would come along, see these jumpers, and unfold one, hold it up against themselves or a friend or partner, sometimes perhaps a parent, and sometimes they would decide that they should like to buy the jumper. And sometimes they would reach the conclusion that for whatever reason, and there could be all sorts of factors at play here, size, style, colour and financial difficulties, they would decide against. And then having done so, they would attempt to refold the jumper and place it back on the pile. But they never quite could. They'd pop a sleeve behind the back and then try and fold another one behind it, and then they'd just look helplessly at this thing and suddenly realise that they didn't stand a cat's chance in Magaloo for folding it again as beautifully as it had been when they found it. And just at this moment of realisation, a gently smiling member of the Selfridges floor staff would step forth as if from the shadows. They're not actual shadows, you understand. The whole thing really is beautifully lit. And offer to take the jumper from them. "It's all right, madam," they'd say. "I can fold that for you." "Oh, that's awfully kind," the madam might then say, and then hand it over, looking just about as relieved as anyone you've ever seen in your life. And then off they'd pop, and the staff member would calmly, quickly and skillfully refold the jumper so that it looked every bit as beautiful as it had done before, possibly even more so, and replace it on top of the appropriate pile, making the whole scene perfect once again. Then they would somehow disappear into those metaphorical shadows, and the whole cycle would start over. I must have stood there for an hour and a half, soap in one hand, socks in the other, as this splendid girl relieved dozens of customers of their unwanted jumper-shaped burdens, and just folded folded, folded. I could not have envied her more. It's this feeling I love, of order restored, of chaos suppressed, of jumpers refolded, and, of course, of toes resocked.
Recipe. Champagne cocktail. These go absolutely wonderfully with devils on horseback, as the crispness of the champagne perfectly complements the saltiness of the bacon and the sweetness of the prunes. What is more, these cocktails are peppy enough to make your prune-bacon assemblage bearable, whilst also including a little supplementary sugar, so you'll get them done in double-quick time. Beware, though, their strength. Too many and you'll soon find yourself straddling a banister, unbuttoned to the waist and calling everyone Leonard, regardless of gender, as happened to me one New Year's Eve in Dunstable. Not pretty, although in mitigation I was taking some rather strong antidepressants at the time. Long story, all fine now, and almost ready to laugh about it. Anyway, for this you will need white sugar, cube of, Angus Durabitters, dashes, two, and just under a third of a pint of cognac, and champagne to fill the glass. Some people can be incredibly snobby about champagne. I myself couldn't care less what brand it is, so long as it fizzes, sounds French, and is served cold. The rest is simple. Take your sugar cube, place it onto a spoon, and dash on your bitters. Then drop the bittered sugar cube into a champagne flute and pour in the cognac, which will create a lovely little syrup to which you should then add your champagne. Once you've done that, you may serve. And let festivities commence.
We'll tack a cup of kindness yet for all and time.
Oh, lovely.
Fitting rooms, of course, can be a cause of friction between couples, certainly around the festive season. My partner, Anthony, is not a fan of using the changing facilities, by which I mean he doesn't really like trying things on. Personally, I think going and trying things on at the fitting room is absolutely essential. You wouldn't buy an avocado without first giving it a bit of a squeeze, now would you? So frankly, the idea that one can just adopt an approach of hitting and hoping whilst attempting to buy a pair of trousers is little short of lunacy. I've long suspected, although Anthony has not really opened a discussion on the matter, that Anthony's hatred of the fitting room stems from his claustrophobia. He is, I must say, a big man. He prefers baths to showers if he's time, and he was never at his best in or around phone boxes. Sometimes I've had to practically force him into fitting rooms on pain of death. I am not paying £170 for an Angora sweater for you, I have been known to shout in the Brent Cross area, if you're not prepared to try it on. Now get in there, get this off, get this one on, get out again and we'll have a little look at you. I was right, too, as it happened. The thing turned out to be a little snug around the midriff, and unless there was something wrong with my eyes, the sleeves could have done with another inch or so. I nipped off, came back with one a size bigger, then one a size bigger than that for safety, and a tragedy was averted. I'd do the same again if I had to. Returns policy should only be used in emergency, and not just because of one man's fear of being trapped behind curtains. Yes, where was I? New Year's Eve. Yes, that's it. I hope I haven't gone off topic. Don't think I have. Gosh, this sherry's Moorish. New Year's Eve. You need party food, guests, Auld Lang Syne, etc. Don't cross your arms till the second verse. Champagne and have a lovely time. Now, if you'd excuse me, I have some prunes to attend to.
At Home with Damien Trench was written and performed by Miles Jupp. The producer was Sam Michel.